In a world of Blizzard podcasts, two brothers will make another one.
Everybody, I'm Joe Ryan.
And I'm Mitch Ryan.
And this is Blizz Talk, the Biz of the Blizz, which is a subtitle that you came up with, but I think you came up with it kind of ironically and don't like it as much as I do.
Yeah, I hated it. I thought it was funny.
I'm keeping it. It's staying in.
That's my naming convention for just about everything. I had a dog named Charles Barkley.
Nice. I like that. So we are two brothers who are obsessed in different ways with Blizzard games, and we just wanted to sit down once a week and have a little chat about what's going on. I mean, Blizzard makes so many different games, so many different types of games, that you could play nothing but Blizzard games for the rest of your life if you're the right kind of person, and probably be pretty happy just working from their catalog, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've been playing Blizzard games our whole life. I could probably just play Diablo 3 for the rest of my life and be happy, honestly.
Yeah, I only recently got into Diablo 3. Well, I played it extensively on console, as you know, but I only just, within the last 2 weeks, finally got into it on my Mac and have been enjoying that. We were nuts for Diablo 2 and even Diablo 1, though, to a lesser extent, because 2 was really where it kind of came together. But 3, yes, I like 3 a ton, and I've been playing it like crazy.
Yeah, I don't know how it stacks up against Diablo 2. I mean, I'm sure it's a better game, but I think Diablo 2 came out at like a better time in our life that I just sunk so much time into it.
Oh,
yeah. We actually upgraded our computer just so we could play Lord of Destruction.
Yep, I remember getting Diablo 2 and LOD, and it just wouldn't run. It wasn't going to happen, and it was like crushing. And somehow we managed to talk our parents into getting a newer computer or something. Maybe it just happened to work out that way, but
I'm pretty sure we threw a huge fit.
Yeah, that seems right.
It
seems like
me.
Something we'd do. It may have been. Hey,
you,
whatever works.
You had a tendency to set me up against the parents as we were growing up.
Hey.
You'd be like, hey, this is a thing that we should do. And I'm like, yeah. Or you would be like, hey, this is going to be the best game ever. You should use your allowance and buy it.
Yeah, I have no regrets about any of that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you don't.
I rarely steered you wrong, I think. I can't, I don't think of anything specific. Maybe you might remember that a little differently.
Furby.
Okay, well, for I definitely talked you into getting a Furby for your, what, like, 8th birthday or something?
It was like 11, I think.
Was it really? Ooh, yeah, you got, wow. Sorry about that. I apologize. No. That's my one regret. That was terrible.
Now, if it was a Furbaka, I'd be okay with it.
Right? That guy is cool. I think we're getting off track already. If you want to listen to the show, you're going to have to deal with some tangents. I hope you like a good tangent, a good wandering conversation, because we're going to be doing some of that. But for now, let's stick to Blizzard things, and I think we should talk just briefly, just give a little taste of like where we started. What's your kind of favorite Blizzard game, maybe your favorite Blizzard series? Because the first Blizzard memory I have is a demo of Warcraft 2. That I liked so much that it prompted me to go to the store and buy Warcraft 1. I'm not sure if that demo was out before 2 had actually launched. I can't say. But I definitely went and bought Warcraft 1 because it was super cheap at the time. And I was like, hey, I like that demo of 2. I'm going to like 1. And I did.
I actually want to go back and play those old games. Those were a lot of fun. I'm sure the interface and stuff probably doesn't hold up so well. But the shareware version of Warcraft 2 is what we had. And it was like the first two levels for each campaign. And we liked it so much that at one point we wound up building farms around the last enemies. of the last level, so they couldn't die and couldn't get out, and so we could just keep amassing an army.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite things in World of Warcraft was getting to cities and stuff and places that I recognized from, like, the first times of playing Warcraft 2. Oh, man. That was exciting moments for me, getting to, like, Hillsbred Foothills and everything.
Yeah, that was great. You know, I don't know about you, but I never cared so much for Warcraft 3.
See,
the heroes kind of threw me off. I don't know, I didn't like that so much.
You know what's funny is, and this is a key thing to why you and I are such a good pair to do this, is I was going to say I think Warcraft 3 might be my favorite RTS game they've made. I don't know what it is. But I liked it a lot, and it could just be because I am such a Warcraft person anyway. But yeah, maybe it was just because I got it a little later than all my friends, so the hype train was really rolling.
That could be. None of my friends in school, besides my friends that were your friends, played games.
Right.
So I didn't have a lot of that. Diving back into Warcraft 2 a little bit, if you recall, we did not have the Battle.net version of Warcraft 2 when
right.
we bought it.
Battle.net so was not a thing at the time,
we had to go... Yeah, it was not a thing yet. That launched later with Diablo 2, I believe. I could be wrong on that, but we actually had to edit, like, the... INI files to get it to connect to Heat.
Yeah, Heat.net. Man, it used to be a mess trying to play games online. I think people probably take it for granted how easy it is now, because even on PC it wasn't that easy to just hook it up and play with people across the internet. But doing all that work, that's probably the most intense computer work I've ever done, was trying to get that thing to work on Heat, and it did, and it was great.
Yeah, I don't know how you managed to do that, because you're helpless with computers these days.
I couldn't do it now, yeah, there's no way. You could give me step by step and I'd fail. This is why I'm a big fan of, like, the Battle.net launcher, where I click the big blue button that says install, and then later on it turns into play, and that just works. And that really works well with the way I want to do things.
Their launcher is probably the best in the business, honestly. When you look at it, it's elegant. It gives you the news for the games. It tells you what's coming up next. If a new game launches, they just add a button at the bottom, and it's like, hey, install this one, why don't you?
You know, I don't have a lot of experience with similar launchers, because I don't really play PC games except Blizzard, and so whatever. That's all I need.
Yeah, in the most case, you're probably getting the best for your money that way anyway.
You know, I don't think there is a single Blizzard game I don't like, but just quickly, what is what's your let's go with favorite series, I guess. If you had to pick one, where do you think you'd land? And we'll count World of Warcraft among just the Warcraft series. You don't have to separate them out.
I mean, obviously that would be Justice League Task Force.
Okay, let's no. Terrible. Just terrible.
It would be, oh, that's such a tough call. They make so many good games. I think I'd have to go with Warcraft, although Starcraft is a very close second.
I'm probably there with you as far as Warcraft stuff. Those are most of my fondest memories, and over the years, I am not hugely into World of Warcraft. I don't actually currently have a subscription. I'll definitely get back in for Legion, and I kind of just play up to the level cap and see all the, you know, storyline stuff, and then I just kind of fade out. I don't really have the time to be trying to get into raids or do any of that stuff, but I would probably go Warcraft. I would say maybe Diablo as a close second, because Diablo is kind of the counterpoint to Warcraft, where I don't have time to sit there with a big group of people and, you know, try to figure out how to beat this guy. Instead, I just load in and I click a lot and everything dies and I'm rewarded for it, and I like that.
You like the Skinner box?
Yes, I do.
Everybody does. I mean, that's why it's a Skinner box. Like, you can't not like it. I mean, you can play it and not feel like not be getting what you want out of a game, but you're still enjoying it psychologically.
Right. You know, and do you figure Hearthstone counts among Warcraft? Because I am a big Hearthstone fan, far more than you are, I would say.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Hearthstone fan.
See, this is we're a perfect team because you'd think we would like all the same stuff, but even the stuff we like for different reasons. When I was describing the show to other people, I said the reason it works is because I'm a lover and you're a hater.
that's pretty accurate.
I mean by that is, yeah, that's what it is. See, you have the type of brain that can find what's wrong with something, and my brain just wants to find what's right. And so I think that adds up to a pretty interesting dynamic.
It really broke me for the stint that I was an indie developer, and I'm still doing a bit of that, so I analyze every game that I play. Really heavily. And things like that. Like with Hearthstone, people either love it or hate it based on the random number generator that goes on. Some people find it exciting and it's like, hey, anything can happen and that's awesome. Or there's the other subset, which I don't think I fall into either one of these necessarily, but there's the other subset who goes, I lost, it was RNG.
Right.
And it's like, I don't believe either of those are the right way to look at it. I think Hearthstone does have too much random number generators going on there that can make like a sure win turn into a huge loss for no reason. And then it's just like, well, you got that win because of luck. But on the other hand, the majority of the time, that's not going to happen. And if you have a better deck and you're playing better, you will win. It's just, I don't think that bodes well for, like, pro play. I don't think RNG needs to be heavily featured in the meta.
Right, and whereas when I pull off that one in a million thing, I'm like, this is the best game I've ever played. And when it happens against me, I rarely blame it. I just go, well, I'm terrible at this, so this is no surprise. By no means do I think I'm a good Hearthstone player. Quite the opposite, but I enjoy every moment of it.
What I do like about Hearthstone is I have actually not played a game of Hearthstone in months, if not a year at this point. But what I do like, my wife plays all the time, and I kind of sit over her shoulder and I'll build a deck for her, or I'll call out the plays that I think she should make, or like in the most recent Tavern Brawl that we were playing, it's, you get to pick two cards and your deck is made up entirely of those two cards. And, I was like, hey, you should play a druid deck, pick Innervate, and then pick Ysera, because when she's in play, you get to pull a random Emerald Dream card every turn. Right. And, with that setup, you'll have like six of her. So you'll just keep getting tons of cards that do really overpowered crap, and you'll be able to play them all because you have Innervate. And right. we destroyed people. It was hilarious.
Can I say, I don't know if this is a new Tavern Brawl or if this is something I just haven't noticed before, but I think it might be my favorite one ever.
Yeah, I may actually reinstall the game to play it. Honestly.
It's so good. And you have to go in with the idea of like, I might be frustrated here because I did a couple. My favorite one was Naturalize and Cold Light Oracle, which just causes you to immediately destroy anything they put on the table while milling their deck to death. And it was the guy I was playing with against when I did that, he had chosen Warlock, and he had chosen Voidwalker and Power Overwhelming. So on like turn three, I had made him draw a bunch of cards, so his hand was almost full. He played out, or he had a Voidwalker from the previous turn, and he played like six Power Overwhelmings onto it. So he smashed me for one really good turn and like dropped me to nearly dead or whatever. And then I just naturalized those guys. And at that point, I had so many Cold Light Oracles and Naturalizes in my hands, because of course Cold Light makes you both draw two cards and Naturalize just makes them draw two cards, that it was just like, I just started burning cards out of his hand every turn. And I think by about turn six, he had died on fatigue damage for trying to draw way too many cards.
That's harsh.
The other one that's no fun is Frost Nova. That was the very first person I played against. They were Frost Nova and Summoning Stone or something like that, which causes any time you cast a spell, the Summoning Stone, if it's on the board, summons a random minion for the same cost of the spell. So every turn, every single one of my minions was frozen, and he got a free minion out of it.
So we played against an opponent that had that same deck, but what my concoction that time was to play the Kobold that gives you plus one spell damage and Fireball.
Nice.
And so they were freezing my minions every turn, but I didn't need them to win anyway, and by turn four, because I went second, I had three of those things on the board, and so I was shooting fireballs that cost four mana, dealing seven damage, and it just got even higher every turn.
Nice. So if you haven't tried the Tavern Brawl for this week, I would get in there and do it, because I hope this comes around again. It is hysterical. So we've talked a little bit about ourselves. Let's get into some news. This particular episode, being the sort of the pilot episode, might be a little bit lighter on content compared to future episodes. We're going to try and dig pretty deep, I think, each episode, doing research on the various games and trying to get through them as much as possible. But I know you have been excited to talk about the new additions to the Heroes of the Storm roster.
Yeah, there's two champions, or heroes, I guess they're called in HOTS, that are coming out. The first one is Chromie, which is like the Bronze Drake, I believe. I don't know too much about Chromie. But the other exciting one for me is Medivh, is coming after Chromie. And Medivh is the awesome... Is he a warlock? It's a warlock.
I guess it depends. He's sort of a mage. Here's how you go. You can buy him as a skin in Hearthstone, and he takes the place of the mage, not the warlock.
Okay.
So we're gonna call him a mage.
Alrighty. Well, he's the mage in Warcraft lore that opens the dark portal and basically creates the conflict between the orcs and humans.
Right, and he is such a cool character, because later, now I could be remembering this wrong, and in the future I'm going to do more of my lore research, because frankly I'd probably be doing that anyway, but I believe later it comes to light that he was just ahead of his time. He wasn't an evil guy, but he knew that the Burning Legion and sort of undead were going to be a problem, and he was getting the orcs to Azeroth as a way of creating a unified force to stop those bigger threats. So he's kind of a cool guy.
I believe that's true, but I think he also does go a little bit mad and then becomes evil.
That may be true.
Because I think both fronts unite against him at some point, and he's like, this isn't what I wanted.
So I read a little bit about his appearance in Heroes of the Storm, and he sounds like a very interesting character in that... well, how much did you read about him? Did you really go deep into all the stuff he's going to be doing?
I did not.
So here's how he works. It doesn't sound like the kind of character you're going to want to be jumping into like a solo queue, because he's not much of a fighter, really, but he's like the perfect addition to a coordinated team. I don't remember specifically all of the information about him, but his bread and butter thing is he can become a raven instead of mounting. He can fly unbidden all across the landscape. Nothing can stop him. And while he's a raven, he can't be targeted or damaged. So you can just fly around. The whole point of him is to fly around and figure out what's going on and report back to your team. And a lot of his skills are something that has to do with that. He's a true support character in that it sounds like he will be doing nothing but supporting, and his ability to output damage is very limited. But in the hands of a team who knows how to utilize him, people are saying it's going to be a game changer for the top end.
Now, does he buff teammates and stuff like that too? Or is he just all about vision?
It's not all about vision. That's certainly a big part of it. I will look it up a little bit right now, see if I can find any other, what the article I was reading about it specifically, to give you more of an idea of the kind of stuff that he is doing. Let's see. All right. Hero Spotlight. Blah, blah, blah. I could have researched this. For some reason, I just assumed you would know everything that was going on with Medivh. So here's his... Well, Chromey, of course, is the bronze dragonfly aspect who has to deal with time and the time stream. So looks like she's got a lot of that sort of, time walker. So, apparently, time walker is a talent that says you've traveled into the future, and as such, you'll learn your talents one level earlier than your teammates. That's... something that Chromey's up to. There's a lot of time things, slowing people and doing that sort of stuff. Medivh, let's see where he's at. They're not even giving it to me here. Terrible.
Nice.
It's not helpful.
Thank you, Blizzard.
Let's see. Everybody wants me to watch a stupid video. Not happening. So here's, he's got his Raven form. That's his trait. Arcane Rift launches an arcane bolt that damages and pierces enemies in a line, sort of a low damage kind of thing. Force of Will, briefly protect an allied hero from all damage. Portal, here's the big one. This is the one I do remember reading about. He can create a portal from one place to another, and allies can just pass through it. So blink from one place to another, out of nowhere.
And he gets there. Is there a range?
There is a range limit, but they said it's a pretty decent size range.
That sounds great for base race scenarios.
Yeah, for sure. Just
drop it in the jungle and then next to their nexus.
Yep, I think that's going to be... That kind of thing is going to come out of nowhere, and a coordinated team with a Medivh who knows what he's doing is going to decimate a team that is not working together.
Yeah, for sure.
On the other hand, a Medivh on a team that is not interested in working together is going to be the most ineffective character on your team. He's not going to be able to do anything. I mean, if you're dropping portals and people are just ignoring them to try and get another kill, you're going to be at a real disadvantage.
I think you misunderstand the game, Joe. I believe the game is all about only fighting and killing the other person and then getting nothing from that and just going back to base to celebrate.
Oh, see, I've been playing it all wrong.
That's my experience in solo queue.
I have only ever... played in solo queue, and I try to ping things and talk to people, but maybe you're right, maybe I'm doing it wrong, because that never seems to get me anywhere. He also has Polybomb, which just says Polybomb a target that will spread Polybomb. So I'm not entirely sure what that means. Maybe it's some sort of polymorph thing, hard to tell. Could just be another damage thing. And then Leyline Seal, release a line of magic that disables enemy heroes. That means that if you're playing Medivh, you're going to be pretty focused on helping the team accomplish their goals.
Right. That's cool. That's the type of character that I would like to play.
For sure. And we've got, we have a team of at least three people that could all get together and maybe try to make something work. Hard to tell if we'd be able to pull it off.
That'd be fun. I hate playing MOBAs solo. I just won't do it anymore.
You're more of a high-end kind of figure out the strategies and play it right kind of guy.
Yeah, that seems to be what I do in most games. I love making new builds in StarCraft to counter like the meta and stuff like that. I'll watch pros play and then figure out what I could have done differently than their opponent to stop it. And I get great joy out of theory crafting stuff like that. I'm also the jerk who has a spreadsheet next to his WoW character, back in like Wrath of the Lich King days, going, okay, I need exactly this gem, this enchant, this whatever, you know, just min-maxing the hell out of my characters.
Right. See, whereas I am typically like, that guy looks cool. How do I use him? Quick match. I'll find out. We'll do it live. And then the team may not like it, but I have fun.
The thing about me that I've realized over the last few years is I hate losing. I am a really sore loser.
See, I lose at everything, so I'm just kind of used to it.
Well, that's one of the things I I don't like so much about Heroes of the Storm compared to some other MOBAs that I've played in the past is that I don't feel like, and I mean, this is probably actually a good thing about the game, but I don't feel like one person can just carry the team.
Hmm. You need more of a concerted effort among all of the team players. You find that's, I'm not a huge MOBA guy, but do you find that in like a League of Legends or something or a Dota 2 that one really good player is all you need?
It's not all you need. I mean, if you're playing against a good team, they'll be able to shut that person down. But having one really good player helps because you can play around the other team. Or in other MOBAs, there's item builds and stuff like that, so you can get power spikes differently than just leveling up. And a good player will at least be able to offset the power of the other team a little bit, and I don't think that's so much the case in Heroes.
But I feel like that's kind of by design. That's not so much a flaw as that that's the game they wanted to make.
Yeah, for right. sure.
And I appreciate that kind of thing because I've always liked the idea of MOBAs. I definitely remember trying to play Defense of the Ancients back when that's what it was, when it was just a map, you know what I mean? But I just can't quite figure it out, and it's not really worth it to me to do the research required to play a game like League of Legends at a level where people won't just rage at you the entire time because that community is the worst.
It really is.
And, you know, you have all the items and all that stuff. You should be buying this, buying that. So I appreciate Heroes of the Storm for what it is, and I have a very good time playing it. I haven't really checked out sort of the competitive scene. I've heard there are some issues with, like, watching the competitive thing. It takes too long for people to get ready between matches and stuff, so it makes for kind of an irritating viewing experience. But hopefully if they kind of get that stuff figured out. I know Heroes has a whole new system coming that I think is in some way going to help with that, though I am not at this time fully aware of what that means.
Yeah, I've looked at it a little bit, but I'm not even max level, so I've not done any like ranked play or anything like that.
Oh, I see. Well, we will we'll definitely have that information for next week then. That's something we can research and find out. And I'm sure everybody who wants to know already knows, but, you know, why not talk about it? Speaking of just choosing a character and then trying to figure it out on the fly, I played Overwatch Beta on PS4 because, of course, much to my annoyance, it isn't available on Mac. Not that my Mac would probably be able to run it anyway. But I played it on PS4, and I will tell you what I think about it in a minute. Because first, I know you want to talk a little bit about some server stuff as far as World of Warcraft is concerned.
Yeah, so I'm sure everybody has heard of the private server Nostalrius being shut down by Blizzard. Basically, the server was running patch 1.12 of World of Warcraft. So pretty much as vanilla as you can get without being alpha. And it had several thousand people playing on the server. And Blizzard decided that they was getting too popular and they had to take a step against it to protect their IP, I believe is what they said. Because there's actually a misconception with IP laws that say if you don't aggressively protect your IP, you can lose it, which is actually not true, as many authors have written about in the past. But a lot of people are angry that they closed this down, and a lot of people are wanting vanilla servers officially through Blizzard, because people miss that aspect of the game. With 40-man raids and all that kind of thing. Slow leveling, money's not hugely inflated, everything like that. The one nice thing that's come out of this is the server admins are actually meeting with Blizzard in the near future to talk about what they can do.
Really?
To see, yeah. They're going to see if, well, I mean, it's not nothing has officially been said about what they're going to talk about, but Blizzard said that they obviously deeply care about the game, so they want to meet with them personally.
That I would think that they wouldn't just meet with them to say, like, sorry, guys, and shake their hand, right? I mean, that doesn't that seem to be trending towards a something? Question mark?
It does. I hope so, honestly, because I would love to be able to go wander through Moldor the way it used to be, you know, without it on fire and full of the stupid kobold things.
Wouldn't it be, I mean, you could, I don't know that you could necessarily bring back the leveling experience and all that stuff, which I assume is kind of what people want. But the Caverns of Time, where you go to the past, are already a thing. It doesn't seem like it would be, you know more about computer hardware and architecture and all that stuff than I do. Would it be that difficult for them to just create a portal in the Caverns of Time that you walk through and you just see the world as it once was? You presumably couldn't get the quests and all that stuff, but I mean, you could walk around, maybe fight some NPCs and just get a look at how things used to be. And I understand that's not exactly what people want, but wouldn't that be something?
I mean, it would be a start for sure. I don't think it would be as easy necessarily as you think it would, because the continents are huge, you
right.
know, so it would be pretty much doubling what the servers have to handle.
For sure. Is there, well, I mean, people already do like some weird cross-server stuff just to get them into like battlegrounds and dungeons and stuff together. Could they not just have you go through that portal and swap over to some other server that's dedicated to running just that? I mean, I'm really a novice as far as this stuff is concerned. I'm clueless.
I mean, if they could, then they would have no reason to not open a server that just has the old stuff.
I see. I want to go back to something you said real quick, because you said there's a misconception about if you don't protect your IP, you can lose it or whatever. Is that their concern? It seems to me that they would be smart enough to know that that is not true. But what I always took away from their talking was that the people who are there now believe that the game we have now is such a superior game to the game we had originally that if they allowed people to, like newer people or whatever, the option to blunder into the old game, that they would hate it and it would ruin people's experience or something.
I mean, they did say all of that, but they initially put out the blanket statement of how you have to protect your IP or you can lose it.
Oh, I see. So,
which
that was...
I think is just PR damage,
right?
Spinning. Because every company comes out and says that, and when they're pushed on it, they're like, yeah, we know it's not really true, and
right.
whatever.
You gotta do whatever the lawyers say to cover your bases for stupid things.
There is a concern with protecting your IP, because if somebody else is running with it, obviously the operation of that server was illegal, because it was using all of their assets they had reverse-engineered the server structure and everything like that. So it was not a legal server. So they have they're fully within their rights to shut it down. No one's saying they're not, but their reaction of, oh, we have to protect it this way is frankly not true, because how many other private servers are there with thousands of people on them?
Right.
I mean, there's tons.
It's an interesting thing. I'm interested to hear what comes out of that meeting. I mean, that must be, I really think that must point towards something, but it's hard to say one way or another. I'm guessing people who are more up on it probably have a more of a clear idea, but in the meantime they've detailed some of what they maybe think is kind of a band-aid for the situation, which is pristine servers. And you are far more familiar with this idea at the time than I am. I'd love to hear. The very little bit I've heard made me think, I don't think this is what people want.
No, it's definitely not what people want. So basically what pristine servers are is it's going to be the current patch of the game, right? So it's still going to be Draenor or Legion by the time it comes out, probably. All they're doing is turning off heirlooms, turning off like all of the experience gains that you can get, turning off the WoW token, and slowing leveling down post 60 back to where it used to be. And I mean, like, oh, and disabling Looking for Group as well. And all of that is cool, right? But because that's bringing it more in line with what the game used to be. But the thing that troubles me about that is the game is no longer set up in a way that dungeoning is optional. You know what I mean? It's like, it's the fastest way to level. You get the best gear. I mean, you always got the best gear, but essentially to quest or anything like that at certain levels, you have to be doing dungeons.
Right.
If you don't have heirlooms. And if you, it's no longer set up to the point where you can just be like, hey, I'm going to try to get a dungeon group together. It's, you have to push the button because it's fast, it's efficient, it's the only real way to progress at a certain point. And it gets rid of all the cross-realm stuff, so there's no, like, instantly popping with people. But that used to work with how the game was, but it's not designed that way anymore.
Right.
You can't just roll that back.
Right. You know, you say all this stuff is cool, and I completely disagree. That sounds, A, just miserable. In my mind, now, maybe you'll disagree. You obviously know more about, like, the vanilla servers, because I think you may have been doing some vanilla stuff or whatever. I don't know that you want to say that necessarily. But I assume people would want to play on a vanilla server was just to see the old content, and the fact that you had to deal with things like no heirlooms and slower leveling and no Looking for Group was just a byproduct of the fact that you really wanted to see old content. So in my mind, when they said, we are not putting in the old content, but we're taking out all of the good stuff we've added since then, I can't imagine who that's going to make happy, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to make anybody happy. Everything they're doing with the, or everything they're discussing doing with the Pristine servers is like, well, this is going to make it more like the experience of Classic WoW, but it's not. What people liked was, like, as you said, the content. But also, I think the game did lose something when they added in Looking for Group. You and Cross-Realm stuff, you really had a sense of community when you had to meet up with people to get a dungeon done, and you would friend them, and you would, like, run with them repeatedly as you all leveled, you know?
Right.
So it would be, like, an impromptu way to form a guild instead of just spamming trade chat, looking for guild, looking for guild. Nobody likes that.
There are definitely things about the original experience. Like, I remember, I guess the problem is, like, as I've gotten older, I just appreciate the things that can get me into it quicker. It's like, if I had to, I definitely have fond memories of, like, if playing as a Horde character, if we wanted to go to Shadowfang Keep, you had to get at least two guys who went through a ton of hassle. And Shadowfang's not even a great example, because that one wasn't that difficult to get to. Something like Gnomeregan or whatever.
Well,
it was a mess. But you had to get two people over there, I believe it was two, to use the summoning stone to then. But I mean, that was cool stuff. I mean, at the time when I sat down in front of that computer and I thought, I might play this for 8 hours, it didn't bother me that it was going to take 45 minutes to get five people. And, you know, who's going to be the one who runs over there? And all the stuff you were looking at, in a lot of cases, was new at the time. Like, I've never been to this zone. I got to run through here. This is going to be awesome. I'm going to look at everything. I'm going to get there. It'll be exciting. Everybody's finally all together. And there are other things that were cool. Like, frankly, I thought that the game was a little cooler when there wasn't necessarily parity between the races. Like, when Horde had Shaman and the Alliance had Paladin, I was okay with that.
I think that's awesome.
I don't think everybody has to have everything. I mean, in the old days, they used to do, like, titles and things. I remember the Scarab Lord title was an Encourage thing, and one person per server got the Scarab Lord title, if I remember properly. I mean, that would have been a badge of honor to wear that thing. Now everything in the game is something anyone could conceivably get, I think, with enough time.
Yeah, they even took away, like, the world first achievements and stuff like that for raids.
Right. It seems, I mean, on one hand, were there that many people complaining that they couldn't get the world first achievement. Taking it out seems like the wrong move. Taking it out seems like a poor choice compared to just like, I mean, I just don't understand the frustration of being like, well, I don't have 40 hours a day to play the game, so I didn't get it. Well, it's like, yeah, but somebody did, and that's the reason they spent all that time playing it was because they wanted it.
I think their reasoning behind taking it out was they didn't feel like that was the best way to play the game. They wanted people to experience the content and not just rush through it. Which, I mean, yeah, if you're making a game, you want people to experience it, but also, who are you to tell the player base how they should play your game?
Right. Well, and that's, I mean, it's a fair point. If you're making the content, you want the people to play it. But, yeah, it just seems weird to take it out, and instead of like, I mean, in some cases, they've just gone and said, everybody can have everything, which is fine. It's just a little boring. But to then just be like, some people are mad they can't get this, so nobody can, that seems like overcorrecting.
Right.
I agree. There were things in vanilla, and this is the one I always use. But as a shaman who played my shaman Oraka, the orc shaman, to no end in the original game, to get your totems, like now, totems are just another spell you have. If you didn't play way back in the day, then you have no idea that to cast an earth totem, I had to go on a quest that took me crazy places all over the world, doing shaman-specific quests, things that would, I would have to walk for half an hour to get somewhere because you were such a low level, you needed that totem, but you weren't high enough to have a mount yet because you had to get a mount at 40. And I would go all the way there and talk to a guy, and he'd be like, now go talk to this guy another half an hour away through dangerous terrain that I was not necessarily leveled for. And in the end, I would have a physical totem that had to take up space in my bag in order for me to cast any type of earth totem spell or whatever. And, you know, that sounds annoying now, but I treasured those things. Every totem I put down, I was like, I worked for that.
I mean, that's kind of the evolution of Warcraft in a nutshell right there. It used to be an experience, right? It used to be a world and a community, and now it's just a game, right?
I think that's fine.
And it's a really good game. You know, I still enjoy it. I don't think it's as difficult as it once was, and leveling is just super fast and pointless that they might as well just start everybody at cap or close to it. But I think there's something to be said about the experience of vanilla WoW. Like, I remember the first character that I made was a female Tauren druid on accident. I did not realize it was a woman because the character models were really horrendous back then. And it's a giant cow person. How am I supposed to know?
Right.
You know? And I was like 12. But I loaded in and just going around through Mulgore, it was like, holy cow, this is a whole world. And I can walk from one side of this continent to the other and there's no loading screens. And if I want to get there, I actually do have to walk at least the first time. And then I can take flight points or whatever. But now it seems like you just get flight points for most of the places. There's a Zeppelin from Orgrimmar to Thunderbluff now, because you just can't get into the Barrens from Mulgore anymore. They just kind of completely, not just changed everything, but really created a different game.
Yeah, I agree. I think I agree with that. And, you know, a lot of my fondest memories are from the old days. And I think part of what has happened is just a necessity because it's hard to keep everyone somewhere. You know, I mean, there's a million different servers or whatever. There's so many people playing. But there are, I mean, are people on Azeroth or are they in Outland or are they in Northrend or are they in Draenor or are they, you know what I mean? In Pandaria? Probably nobody's in Pandaria. I think everybody kind of hated that one. But in the original, I mean, you knew where everybody was. They were in Azeroth for sure. And all of my memories, like, I remember one night in the middle of the night, I, like, got off work or something. I came home, was playing a rogue. It was an undead rogue named, I don't remember because it's been 10 years or whatever. But it was like, people were like, we're going to go attack Goldshire. Is it Goldshire? The first town? So it was, I mean, it was like, get yourself to wherever, I guess, Booty Bay or something. You know, you had to go. It was a real pain to get from there here to there. You have to go down to Stranglethorn. And then we had to get in the ocean and swim out and around to get up to Westfall. And then we had to sneak through Westfall. I mean, I was level like 18 probably. So, I mean, this is crazy. But we had like 30 people who just out of nowhere decided we're going to do this. We're all swimming through there. We're all taking our gear off because we know we're going to get killed by water creatures. Most of us were way too low of a level to be doing this. Sneak through Westfall, sneak up on Goldshire, and just start going nuts, attacking everybody, running from the guards, because back then the guards could just destroy you. I don't even know if that's the case anymore. And then, you know, the call goes out, and all of a sudden we see the cavalry riding in from Stormwind, all the high-level players thundering down on their mounts as we scatter. And I remember jumping up into, like, the V of a tree somewhere with stealth on and just panning the camera around as this squadron of warriors and whatever else alliance dudes went cruising by, and just this feeling of like, I'm right here, invisible, and they're passing by feet away. They have no idea I'm here. It was so awesome. And like, now if I was playing Warcraft, you couldn't talk me into doing something like that, because there's progress to be made, man. I don't have time to take a break and go have some fun. There's grinding to do.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? Because the game was way more of a grind back then.
Right.
The grinding is all you have now. Because you can't even do things like that anymore. There's the achievements to attack, like, kill all of the leaders of the other faction, right?
Right.
So I decided to jump in a group with that not too long ago. And we hit Ironforge and killed that guy, Darnassus, and all of those places. We were doing Stormwind last, and we got to the gates of Stormwind, and I was about to go through with my huge group of people, walk in to hit the actual, like, where it pops up and says Stormwind, and I get phased out of the zone with the rest of my group because they were all on a different server.
Oh, jeez. Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if part of what made going off and having some fun in the old days was because it was such a grind, and it was just like, I've been trying to get from level 22 to level 23 forever, it seems like, especially compared to now where you kill six guys and it's over. So it's like, I need a break from this. What can we do? I don't want to quit playing. Let's go do something. And I guess now, I mean, like, you can do the pet collecting. There's more stuff to do than there ever has been. And it's easier to get into all that stuff than it ever has been. But it's not as spontaneous as it once was.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. And, I mean, there was something to say about doing the things that weren't necessarily designed to do, because the guards in Goldshire would f*** you up specifically so you couldn't do that.
Right. You
know? But it was cool to get a group together and just go do it.
Yeah.
It was like, I'm disobeying the game, and I'm gonna go do something fun.
Right.
Now the game's just like, hey, you wanna go do that? Well, we have the system designed here for you.
Right, that's true. Well, you know, but here's the ironic thing is, all this talk about Warcraft stuff really makes me want to play it now. Not just vanilla,
yeah,
but whatever's. I'll go play some more Warlords right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, I might re-up that subscription soon.
Shouldn't have. Well, you know, we need to be playing all this stuff anyway, because we are the hosts of a Blizzard podcast at this point.
Nah,
not it. So last thing, we don't want to go too long for our first episode, because future episodes, I've been podcasting for a long time, and they are just going to get longer and longer every week. But I do want to touch on my Overwatch beta experience. Now, you didn't get into the beta stuff, really, did you? Or did you play a little closed beta or something?
I was in the closed beta. months ago, I think. Oh. And I played a little bit, but from what I understand, like, all of the progression stuff has changed from when I played. And now you, like, unlock skins or something like that. None of that was in when I was playing.
Huh. Well, I'm coming at this from two angles. One is that I'm not a huge first-person shooter guy, and as much as I like the idea of a class-based shooter, I've never been particularly good at it because I don't have a team of friends to do it with. I used to like playing Team Fortress 2 and stuff, but I wasn't good at it, and the groups I was pairing up with usually weren't all that good at it, so it was just kind of a crapshoot or whatever. But I am a huge Blizzard fan, so I thought it would be interesting just to see how it shook out, you know, going into it. It was free. I only played for like 2 hours or whatever, but I still figure, why not try it out? We're going to do this podcast. I'll talk about it a little bit. So I downloaded it. I literally nothing about this game other than it's a first-person shooter. I wasn't even 100% sure it was like a class-based shooter when I downloaded it. And I knew what the cover art looked like, and that was it. So I just started scrolling through the characters like, who looks cool? Picked a guy called Reaper, and he just is some dude with like two little shotguns and looks kind of like Death, unsurprisingly. I didn't even know they were shotguns when I went running straight towards the enemy line. I hadn't even pulled the trigger. It was like a capture the point thing. I ended up taking a right when I guess I should have gone straight to meet enemies. And then I came around behind them and just started unloading. I got the first three kills of the match and then capped the point almost single-handedly. And then it was like, go capture this point. So I ran over there, and it was basically the same thing. They were going one way. I came from another way, gunned down like three more guys, started capping the point, got into a little bit of a firefight before my team showed up. We capped the second point and victory in like 2.5 minutes. I had like six kills and no deaths. And unsurprisingly, I will be getting that game on day one.
That is an experience that you will only ever have in a beta of a game, because never again will you be able to get behind a group of people like that, because everybody has now had that happen to them once, so somebody is watching their back.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's hard to tell on like PS4 though how many groups of coordinated players there are going to be. It's probably not going to be quite as intense as the PC version.
That's true. I just can't play shooters on consoles. I don't know if I don't have the coordination for it or what, but it just does not work for me.
I can't play them on PC because at least on console we all have the same handicap. On a PC, I'm too old and too slow to even try. I mean, like, on PS4, everybody's rocking basically the same hardware. You know what I mean?
Right.
On a PC, it's like, it's the Wild West. There could be somebody with some crazy stuff that I've never even heard of, and he was just going to destroy me no matter how good I think I am. And I'm not that great at the Twitch part of it. So
yeah, I'm not a huge shooter fan either. The only one that I play on a regular basis, it's not a Blizzard game, but Counter-Strike I play an awful lot of. And I've gotten really into that, but it's more slow and methodical, and you, like, pick spots to wait for the enemies and stuff like that. You're never really rushing through unless you're on T-side. So there's not as much of the twitchy stuff. So I'm a bit better at that.
Oh, I see. I think part of the fun of Overwatch is that there are so many things. It feels like the natural evolution, in a way, of Team Fortress, where it's like, it's things you would think of, but nobody's ever thought of them before, apparently. Like, there's a character called Widowmaker, who's this, like, purple lady with a sniper rifle, right? Everybody knows a sniper rifle normally carries, like, two weapons, a sniper rifle for long-range shooting, and, like, an SMG if they get too close. Widowmaker carries one gun where if you pull the, you know, the left trigger to aim down the sights, you aim down the scope and it's a sniper rifle. But if you're not doing that, it is just an SMG automatically. It's like, duh, How did we not figure that out forever ago? Like, if you see somebody do it, it shows them carrying a little gun, and you can tell not just because they lift it up to their shoulder, but the gun actually morphs like a transformer longer into a sniper rifle. And then similar to Team Fortress 2, there's like a 1.5 second thing where it charges up the power of the shot to 100%. So you can't, there's no like, or at least it should be less of a problem, people quick scoping or whatever they do in like Call of Duty.
Right. That's one of those things that only happens in video games once you've decided that realism doesn't matter anymore. Because, like, I feel like early first-person shooters were all, like, Doom and stuff were like, we've got rocket launchers, isn't that awesome? And it's like, yeah, it is, but those are real and do cool damage. And then you get, like, you get other weird guns that, like, are bizarre, but could be feasible, or are just alien technology or whatever that do basically SMG or rocket launcher things. And, everybody's always like, well, you have to have more guns, more guns. And then at this point, they're just like, well, we want a sniper rifle and an SMG, and we're a video game. You don't have to switch weapons.
Right. Some people, like, the classes are really neat. And here's another cool thing that I haven't seen. As I say, I don't play a lot of, like, class-based shooters or whatever. But as you're choosing your character, there's a thing on the side that tells you, like, you have nobody who can build turrets. You have too many snipers on your team. You have no defensive characters on your team. You have too many attackers. So as you're scrolling through, it's telling you, like, I can scroll through and pick a character based on whoever I pick, all of those warnings go away. So I know I'm filling in a spot where somebody else doesn't already have it. And then I don't have to, like, spend as much time looking at my team and going like, oh man, who should I be? Because it's not the kind of thing where you're going to want to main a character. Like, maybe you get really good with one guy, or if you play with a team of friends, then you can probably do that. But people switch heroes on the fly, and then you have to switch to counter what the other team is doing. You're not picking a guy and sticking with it. And a lot of times you're going to want to change, maybe even between every time you die. And I think you can go back to the zone where you spawn in and change even without having died. But don't quote me on that exactly.
That's interesting. So, I think that's a great system because it'll allow coordinated team play without actually having to talk to your team.
Right.
But at the same time, I also feel like there's just going to be a large group of people who are like, I don't care what that says. I just want to play Widowmaker.
Yeah, there's already a bunch of people who are just like, I main Widowmaker and that's all I'm going to do. And if you don't like it, play with your own friends. Don't get in the solo queue with me. And that's fine. I mean, whatever. I don't have to win every time. They can do what they want. I don't have to stay in the game with the other four Widowmakers. I'll go find a different game. But I think it's fun to switch the characters.
How easy is it to find another game? Is it like server browser or is it like a matchmaking
system? Well, I mean, on console it's matchmaking. I can't speak for PC. I have no idea.
That's the problem that I have with that type of player and why I don't like playing solo queue, because it's like, I was put into this game, and like, yes, it's true, I don't have to stay here, but a lot of games like this will punish you if you leave too often.
Right.
So, I kind of do have to stay here.
As far as I know, so far, there is no downside to leaving, but we only had quick play available in the beta, and there is a ranked play thing. So as you play and you move up the ranks, I have to assume if you're a decent player and you're climbing up, you're probably going to get beyond the people who just want to main Widowmaker, who, if they Widowmaker no matter what, should, in theory, not be making it that high on the ladder or whatever.
You would think that, but that just lends me to believe that you have not played too many competitive games.
Well, that is true.
In Counter-Strike, for example, there's always this one person who's like, I'm going to use the AWP, which is like the one-hit kill sniper rifle that costs $1 million. And then someone else on your team is like, but I wanted to use that. And then they get into an argument, and then they both buy it. And it's like, you do not need two of those. We are going to...
Well, at least with this, in theory, there somebody will be willing to change to another class, and it's easy enough and quick enough to do so. But I urge anyone who hasn't tried it to give it a go when it comes out. There's a, and as far as I can tell, there's like a class for everybody. When I was doing terrible at one point with somebody, I switched to this guy named like Tornbjorn or something, who's like a little dwarf who has a gun that shoots like molten hot rivets. But his main thing is to just make a turret, and then his secondary weapon is a hammer that will heal or upgrade the turret. So I could just slap down a turret on a point we're supposed to be defending and hang out and repair it or upgrade it to level 2, and it would gun down loads of people who just kept running straight down the hallway towards it.
Now, the other thing that I was going to ask you is, how do you feel, I know this has been talked to death elsewhere, but how do you feel about this being a retail release, $60?
You know, as a person who's playing it on the console, it just, that's just par for the course as far as I'm concerned. Like, I paid the same amount, I believe, for Star Wars Battlefront, and this game is way more of a game than that game is. That game's barely a game.
That game is terrible. I was all set to buy Battlefront, right? I was like, I have my money in hand, I'm gonna buy it. Ooh, open beta. And they lost a sale by letting me play that game early.
I think they may have lost a lot of sales by letting people play that game early. Because there's just, I mean, it's fun. It's a cool game. And but it's a real Star Wars fan game only. Because if you are like not just obsessed to be within that world, which I am to some degree, but it's not an amazing game. Overwatch, on the other hand, is an amazing game. From what I have played of it, which I admit is very little. But I had more fun with 2 hours of Overwatch than I did in 15 or more of Battlefront. To get in there and have different characters and be able to learn their abilities. And when you figure out how an ability works with another ability, and the, I mean, they're all so different. Like Widowmaker has, seems as though everybody has some sort of traversal ability. Hers is she just throws a grappling hook and can get up on places nobody else can get. Makes total sense because she's a sniper. Like, that guy Reaper, his ultimate move when you charge it up for killing enough people or whatever is when you hit it, it goes into like a third person view and he just shoots the shotguns in a full 360 degree arc all the way around him, and it essentially kills anybody who's close enough to, you know, be within the range of the things. But his traversal move is he takes a second to charge up and then he rematerializes wherever you are pointing the cursor. So if all you got to do is you save up that ultimate, you see somebody escorting, like there's a mode where they have to escort a payload somewhere and blow something up or whatever. You wait until they're coming around the corner, you hit teleport, you materialize in the middle of them and immediately smack your ultimate button and you just wiped their whole team. Those moments are so good.
Yeah, that sounds great. Is there any way to counter that? Like, are there like people with shields or whatever that can block that if they saw it coming?
Yeah, and it takes a few minutes for him, like not a few minutes, but I mean, he starts to materialize, and it's obvious that he's going to show up there. A really good player, I think you probably wouldn't have much hope, but, I mean, there are some characters like Tracer, who's the girl from the front box art. You can just tap it, and she essentially teleports, like, zip, straight away. She could get out of there. There are defensive characters that just have giant shields, or you might even be able to kill him before he could get that ultimate off if you were really focused on it, but I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to have played more to figure it out. But, I mean, those people's ultimates and abilities charge up so fast that there's always something crazy going on. It's just really good stuff. And each of the characters is so different, but all of them are fun, I think.
The only one that I've really looked into is the, I don't know any of their names besides Tracer, but the girl who's in the giant mech thing, who's the StarCraft II pro that decided to leave her to leave the game so she could come defend her homeland.
Nice.
It's just all sorts of meta for Blizzard.
Right.
Now what gets really weird with that is Overwatch characters are starting to make their way into Heroes of the Storm.
I know, I saw Tracer was in there.
Which means that in this bizarre world that Blizzard has, because they're all connected now with Heroes of the Storm, with the bizarre world that they have, StarCraft is both a game and real.
Right. It's awesome. I love when they cross-pollinate all their stuff. And that's another thing that's nice about the Blizzard launcher is even when they don't directly interact, and I guess they all kind of do now because of Heroes of the Storm, but like I just logged into Heroes of the Storm yesterday and it was like, oh, by the way, you have Malthiel's horse from Reaper of Souls now because you played to level whatever, 70 or something. It's like doing stuff in one game earns you stuff in another game. There's never been a company, I don't think, you might correct me if I'm wrong, where I never feel like I'm wasting time playing a game, even if I was like, I could be playing that other game, because half the time I'm getting something fun in the other game just for playing this one.
Yeah, for sure. I'm hoping they eventually will do something with the WoW subscription, since numbers are waning and stuff like that. Like, let me pay $15 or even $30 a month to get, like, goodies for other games while paying the WoW subscription.
That'd be pretty cool. They should do that. Just drop in, like, you'll get, in addition to your WoW subscription, you get this and that, a new mount or a new skin or a new card back or all of the above for
right. And
other
I mean,
games.
Even if it was, like, only once a year or whatever, that'd still be pretty cool. I mean, they do it when you, like, I bought Legacy of the Void Collector's Edition, and in Diablo, they were like, here, have a probe pet.
Right. I saw, so yeah, you showed me that probe. That was cool.
Yeah, I love him. I'm keeping him forever. Oh, that's another thing. Have you run into any of the menagerie treasure golems?
No, I have, you know, I've hoped to find one, but I haven't. I've actually, since we started talking about the podcast and stuff, I just bounce around between games. I've been playing, I have played my first 6 or 7 StarCraft II matches online. I've never played StarCraft II online until the past couple days, and I'm raring to hopefully play some Heroes of the Storm today. And I'm always playing Hearthstone because it's on my phone, so it's pretty easy to just get to. But yeah, I'm all over the place, but I never feel like, as I said, I never feel like I'm wasting time. Every single one of their games is so good.
Yeah, for sure. And I really need to re-up my WoW subscription.
Yeah, for sure.
Jump into there.
I think that's probably about all we have for this week. Is there anything you want to quickly touch on before we wrap it up?
I think I'm good.
All right. We'll be back next week with some more stuff. I'm sure we'll be able to do a little more research and play some more of these games, and there's always something going on in the land of Blizzard. I haven't actually set up the Twitter or the email yet for the show, so I'm not going to say it's one thing when it may be another. I'll make sure to include those in the show notes, so if you want to follow us on Twitter or email the show, check out the show notes. I'll have that information in there for you. But I guess until next time, everybody, enjoy your Blizzard games.